In this episode, I share with you a guest who is trained in NLP, is an absolutely fantastic team leader, and is the mother of six-year-old twin boys. I understand they are real going concerns. Be sure and join me for this really exciting and interesting show.
Suicide Zen Forgiveness, the pod that shares the stories of those affected by suicide. Lost a loved one? Attempted it yourself? Come listen in with your host, Elaine Lindsay. Please note, the Suicide Zen Forgiveness podcast is for education only. Some of this subject matter could be triggering. For those of you that are either grieving or having mental health problems, please call your local suicide hotline or mental health office if you need immediate help. And now, here's your host, Elaine Lindsay.
My guest today, her name is Danielle Kopo, and Danielle was raised to be resilient. She's fueled by grit, and she's courageous to the core. After only 8 months of marriage, her husband joined the military. Danielle became a mom to 6-week premature twin boys and survived a Category 5 hurricane just weeks after returning from the NICU. Her husband then deployed, and she became the sole caregiver to toddler twins while leading a team at work with 60% overnight travel. In 2020, she lost her mother to suicide. She faced the global pandemic, that we all did, and left a toxic work environment. All of that within 6 months. She then wrote the book Unstoppable Grit, Breaking Through the 7 Roadblocks Standing Between You and Achieving Your Goals. It was released in February this year. I'm really excited to share my guest with you, and she'll be with us in just a few moments. Without further ado, I would love to introduce you to my guest, Danielle Kopo. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me on the podcast. I appreciate it.
As everyone heard, you have a podcast of your own. You are, in my eyes, quite the dynamo. And you've taken such charge of your grief, and as a mother of twins, I just, hats off to you, absolutely. I say I'm a slow learner, and something that took me 40 years to get going, you just seem to do it. And I think part of it is that's your personality, and you're just, yeah, let's just get it done, which, oh my God, I am so in awe of you. But enough of me talking, I would like to suggest that perhaps, Danielle, you just start where you want to in sharing with our audience some of your journey.
Yes, that you talk about personalities, and I am a very driven personality, but I believe that my drive was innate within me, but it was also nurtured within me. And a lot of that has to do with my mom. My mom was somebody who when I was 2 years old, my mom and my dad got divorced when I was two and a half years old. And I really saw my mom rise from having nothing into becoming this very successful woman. When I was growing up, she was a single mom. She was going to school full time, getting her bachelor's degree, and she was serving in a restaurant. And we came from nothing. We used to live in this tiny one bedroom apartment. My bed was in the living room. And I saw her just work so hard to eventually, she had a position in pharmaceutical sales, eventually rise in the corporate ladder in the 1990s, becoming one of the region managers for one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world, which in the 1990s is not as prevalent as it is today. And so that's why I say definitely drive and motivation is an innate characteristic within me, but it was also modeled for me. And so I believe that my mom really nurtured that within me.
Oh, that's incredible. It's a wonderful childhood, a way to grow up when you had to go through the divorce as well. I think it's wonderful that your mom took that and made an awful lot of positives for you. And there's nothing better than a positive role model. My parents came from Scotland. I came from Scotland. But they believed that marriage was an equality partnership. And so they would both pitch in doing whatever they needed to. But I laugh because I tell my friends that although my father would help my mom, he'd vacuum, he'd do whatever, all the curtains had to be closed on the house. He was still the man of the house. It was a long time ago, so it was a bit of a different scenario. But as a woman, my mother also climbed the corporate ladder and was a librarian at the National Archives here in Ottawa, and went on to work in England when my father was seconded to NATO for a few years. So it's a lot. It's not just who we are and what we are born with. It is nurture as well, absolutely. So you also have, I think, a really incredibly busy and exciting adulthood as well. Mother of twins. Now, that's, I did say hats off to you. That's a full-time 24-hour-a-day job, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I say that my twin boys are 6 years old, and I say that they have more energy than a squirrel on a triple espresso because they are nonstop. The other day, they went to school all day. They had karate. Then we did baseball practice, and then we came home and we were still doing laps around the house just to burn out some energy. So I wish I could bottle it up and turn it into an energy drink for myself, but I just get to try to find a way to keep up with them.
I don't think we remember being that way as children, but in fact, pretty much think we were.
Yeah. And I mean, I hear from their teachers, I always hear comments in passing, like, your boys have a lot of energy. I go, yes, I know. They're a lot of energy compared to most kids their age as well.
Two of my grandsons, God forgive me, I call them heathens because they don't have an off switch. These, like your boys, they're now 7 and 10, but I've never seen them turn off. My son says they do sleep, but my son slept for 3 hours a night when he was a child. That was all. Yeah, we were all always exhausted because he was so busy. And that's why my heart goes out to you, because I can remember our daughter's 9 years older than my son. And at night, she'd be crying, saying, Daddy, please make him go to sleep. Like, I have to go to school tomorrow.
Yeah.
But he's reaping the rewards now with his own children. Your husband is, I believe, helicopter pilot?
He is. He's a Black Hawk pilot in the U.S. Army.
Yes. Okay. With very young kids, I'm assuming your husband's been deployed.
Yes. My husband deployed to Iraq when my kids were between 1.5 and 2.5 years old. Wow. So he was deployed for an entire year to Iraq. While at the time, I was also leading a team for a Fortune 500 organization as one of their senior sales managers. I had 5 states that I had a team that I spanned across, and I was traveling every single week. Wow. I like to say that my life is never busy. My life is just very full.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good. Because being busy does not equate to fullness or satisfaction, or in fact, getting anything done. We can be busy and do nothing.
Yeah, I studied neurolinguistics. And so utilizing certain words definitely shifts our mindset on how we approach things. So you'll rarely hear me say, I have a very busy life, or I'm juggling a lot. It's no, I have a very full life. And everything that I put on my plate is something that I choose. And if it's not serving me, then I choose to find a way to take it off my plate.
Absolutely. That's a really good point, because I think when you have tools, if you will, like NLP, and there are other tools as well, that allow you to be a little more in charge of your time and your life. When we go through tragedy, I think we're a little more prepared and more able to deal with things. When people are younger, they don't necessarily have those tool sets. And the modeling that you saw from your mom when you were a child, that's another tool in your toolkit. So let's go on to what's not such great pieces in your life.
Yeah, so my 2020, like many of us, was a year of a lot of change. And for me, it was a year of change personally and professionally. So in 2020, my husband had just returned home from his deployment. So that shift, it was difficult when he was gone. Absolutely. It was a lot more exhausting for me when he was gone, just because there was more demand that was put on me as a primary caregiver. But when he got home, what I really did not anticipate was the challenges of, here is somebody who just served in war and they don't come back the same. No matter whether you've seen something or not, just the way that they are trained for war changes who you are as a person. And so when he came back, he was a different person, and I was also a different person. I had also become much more independent. I was used to doing everything on my own. We had to figure out how to do parenting together, which I was used to making all the sole decisions as a parent. Now we're trying to navigate through our different parenting styles and how does that come together to really try to find a way to be united front. And so that was a big shift for us. And right when we started to find our rhythm and our groove on becoming a family unit, March 8th, I learned the news that my mom had been taken by suicide. Oh. And my mom had battled with mental health for a very long time. My grandma was bipolar. My mom was bipolar. So she had been battling it with a really long time. And we actually had an estranged relationship for 13 years. So it was one of those things where my mom and I's relationship, there was a lot of beauty, but there was also a lot of brokenness in our relationship. I didn't find out until later on in my life that my mom actually had taken me from my father. My mom took me from him, didn't tell him where I was for a long time. He eventually found, but through a lot of fighting, she really kept me from him. So I didn't end up meeting him again until I was 15 years old. And so there's a lot of... the beauty of my mom and I's relationship is we were very close, and she was somebody who I thought was somebody who just loved me unconditionally, in the sense that she took care of me. I thought that my dad had taken off on me. But then when I later found out that my mom had taken me from me, there was a lot of anger and resentment and frustration with that. And so there's many times throughout our relationships where we'd be very close, but then we'd be very estranged. And ultimately it led to a 13-year estrangement towards the end. And so when I learned the news that my mom had been taken by suicide, I was devastated. Even though my mom and I were estranged, she was still my mom. She was still somebody that I loved dearly. And I couldn't imagine her being in so much pain that she felt the only way out was suicide. And I believe that suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And I'm very mindful at what I say when I talk about suicide. I don't ever say that she committed suicide. Mm-hmm. I say that she was taken by suicide, because my mom had suffered from mental health. And a lot of the reasons why she had spiraled down to the point of where she was at was because she wasn't utilizing the medication that she had been prescribed, or wasn't on the right medication, or as people would tell her, oh, you don't need that medication, you're just fine, and the stigma around it, when really her friends were doing her a disservice by telling her she didn't need to be on medication. I knew her well enough to just know, hey, be on medication. That's just going to help you just be the best version of yourself. And so right when that happened, just a week after that, the pandemic hit and the world had shut down. So I wasn't even able to go home. I wasn't able to go through my mom's things. I wasn't able to have any sort of coping and healing through that process of going through it. And then 2 months after that, the company that I had been with for 7 years got acquired by a larger organization, and it became a very toxic work environment, and I ended up leaving the organization. So within 6 months, everything about my life had completely changed, and I felt so lost and so confused, and I felt like a sense of my identity had been taken away. I was still trying to mourn the loss of my mom and still trying to comprehend like what ifs that go through. You've got the five stages of grief where there was the denial that it happened. There was the anger at her for taking her life. Then there was the bargaining. What if we had made amends with each other? Would she still be here? Then there was a part where I got very depressed over everything that had taken place all at once. And finally, I got to a point through a lot of self-reflection, a lot of self-discovery, and talking more and more about her passing and being open and vulnerable about it. I finally reached a point of acceptance, but it's still those what ifs and the bargaining still go through my head quite a bit.
I can totally understand that. First, let me offer my condolences. Something that people have to understand, when we lose someone, when we lose a job, when we go through divorce, grief is a process that, in all honesty, has no end. It's like the tide. It comes in and it goes out, but that is a forever thing. And sometimes it comes up the shore farther and sometimes it doesn't. And those are the times that we're less stuck in the grief and we can go forward. Again, I say an absolute testament to your makeup that you could make the choices to become introspective, to do that self-reflection, which is critically important. And one thing I want to stop here, because I thank you so much for clarifying and talking about the fact that we need to use different languaging. I do this podcast and am on this mission to end the silence, the stigma, and the shame. And part of that is people not understanding that saying someone committed suicide, not only is it not true, it is wrong because it is no longer an offense. It was, in fact, a punishable offense, attempting suicide. And in the Catholic Church, it was the greatest sin you could commit. And it's no longer under the auspices of that, either legally or within the church. There's a much more forgiving tone and understanding. This is not done to harm anyone. It's done most often because the person wants to save the people they love from mm-hmm. themselves. And that's such a sad thing. And the fact is, you can look back on your mom taking you from your dad as, in her mind, an incredibly loving thing to do. And cocooning you without him, she felt that was a need. And in her mind, I truly believe it was done out of love. That doesn't make it any better for you and your dad, because that's a bond one should never break. But mental illness doesn't take pauses to quantify whether something is going to be good for somebody else. It just doesn't. Mental illness is all about itself. It's about devouring the individual that it inhabits. And it is, to me, the cruelest thing on earth, because it's almost impossible to change the mind of a mental illness. Notice I'm not saying the person, but that's so deeply ingrained. And even when you're incredibly healthy, I'm sure what I term the itty-bitty shitty committee, everybody's got one inside. Sometimes they're not that bad. When you have the itty-bitty and you have a mental illness, those are warring factions that tend to team up against you. They're never on your side. And that makes it even harder for people. The fact that your mom held down an important job and looked after you, I say kudos to your mom. I really do. I understand the estrangement. I absolutely do. Our daughter is mentally ill, and we haven't seen her in over 5 years. I understand how difficult that is, and we understand that we can't tag her as the mental illness. The things she's done were not done by her. It's a concerted effort of those mental health pieces and the itty bitty inside and all of those that are trying to harm her. And it's not something easy to understand, and more so when the person that had the illness is gone. But I really commend you for all that you've done. And now we're going to get to the fact that your book, you've written a book that I think is pretty incredible. And you want to go ahead and give people the title, and we will talk about it. And be sure you can get it along with the transcripts. You can get a link to go buy the book. And I strongly suggest, because I believe there's nobody on this earth that does not have someone they care about that is struggling with a mental illness.
Yeah.
So do tell.
Yeah. So my book is Unstoppable Grit: Break Through the 7 Roadblocks Standing Between You and Achieving Your Goals. And in the book, I do share my mom's story. I do share in detail the story of what it was like losing her and the stages and what I did to find a way to cope and heal through that process. I also share my own experience of overcoming postpartum depression. So I do understand the challenges of feeling like, I just remember after the birth of my twins, they were born 6 weeks early, right after they were released from the NICU. So they were in the NICU for 2 weeks. Right after they were released from the NICU, a Category 5 hurricane hit Tampa, Florida. And one of my boys was hooked, his heart monitor was hooked up to a generator. I go into great detail the story.
Oh.
But I talk about the steps and what it took to not only identify that I had postpartum depression, and then also what were the steps that I took to overcome postpartum depression. And really, I relate that a lot to burnout prevention, because the steps that I learned overcoming postpartum depression is what helped me not only survive when my husband was deployed, but I thrived during the time of his deployment because of what I learned overcoming postpartum depression, which is why I'm so passionate about speaking out burnout prevention. Because a lot of people, they talk to me and they go, how did you do that year that he was deployed with 2-year-old twins and still working? And I'm like, that's exactly what I go into in the book. It's like, how do you have a thriving career and have a career and life that you love? You can have both. It doesn't have to be exclusively one over the other. And this is how you do it. And that's how I walk people through the steps of in the book.
Right. And something I want to go back to, just because I think it's important for people to really understand the workings of different things. Your husband comes back after a year, and these little people were 1.5 to 2.5, which is a very time as far as learning is concerned. So they've spent a year learning that mom's in charge, and mom makes all the decisions, and mom is the central figure. And then your husband comes home, who's been through this horrific experience, who is a changed person. We know that for everyone that is deployed. And now, not only do you and he have to work out your new dynamic, but the kids have to work out, who is this big person that's now taking some of mommy's duties? Like, how does that work? And it just, I think it's interesting, because when you talk to different people, I've had a lot of friends whose partner was deployed, including my father when I was young, and my father spent time in Gaza and Ismailia in Egypt as a peacekeeper. And he was also in the RAF and spent a year in Aden, in Yemen, called Yemen.
Yeah, yeah, so, not a safe place.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. We have other family members who did not come back at 21 years of age. And all those dynamics make, it's a different mind shift for you as a child than it is for the adults. And yet they're just as difficult. And then you get that whole mix of trying to remold the family unit I think it's really important for people to be mindful and not just thankful for people's service, but mindful of the effort they have to put in to reintegrate themselves, not just into society, but into their own families. And I don't think we pay enough attention to our military people and our paramedics and all those who put their life on the line for us and their families who put their lives on hold. And it's not often I get to say this, but as a child of a military man, it's not about November 11th for me. It's about anyone that's in uniform or anyone that I know. I will thank them all year long because that is the ultimate sacrifice. And it's not for one day. It's for the entire time you are military.
Yeah, I'm always appreciative when people say thank you for your service. And it hits me even more home when people say thank you and thank your family for your service. Because yes. That, I know they really get it. Because it's one thing, you know, my husband joined the military 8 months after we got married. So I knew what I was getting into. Initially, I was not thrilled. I actually resisted it quite a bit because we were older. He was 32 when he joined. But my kids were born into it. Now, they don't know any different.
Yeah.
But they do a lot of sacrifice with their dad being gone for an entire year and then coming back. So I'm always so appreciative when people will say thank you and thank your family for your service. And same with police officers, paramedics, firefighters. Yeah. Because one thing that's unique about their particular role is service members, they go to war and they come back. And
every day.
They come back. But the firefighters, the police officers, the paramedics, they see trauma every single day. Yeah. And that affects their psyche and affects how they are at home. And I do agree with you that there's more opportunities for us to really show our appreciation for our first responders and for our military service.
Oh, absolutely. And part of this platform for me is getting others as well as myself to show more gratitude for the people we have around us, the people who serve us, the people who take the time to go that extra mile for other people and their families, because whether you were on board or not, once you enlist, you can't just hear, oh, sorry, my wife doesn't want me to stay. It's not how it works. And it's really, I think it's heartening to have people acknowledge that. And I don't think one day is enough. I really don't. So the next time you see somebody with a veteran's license plate and the whole family's in the car, say thank you to the family. You know, whether it's firemen or policemen or military or paramedics, all of these people put their life on the line for the rest of us on a continuing basis. And we've gone a little to the left of probably where you thought we were going today. But I think it's important when these things come to mind that we put them out there, because we don't know who's going to hear it and maybe take it and offer it to somebody on a day they really need a little bit of gratitude.
Yes, absolutely.
So I want to ask you something that I think is important, because for so many decades, we hide behind the fact that someone died by suicide, and we tend to not speak about them. Can we ask you for your mom's name?
Oh, yeah. My mom is Pamela Stevens. She went by Pam for short. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm working on putting something together that the podcast itself is going to be doing a memoriam in dedication to, and we'll be starting with our guests, because I think there's a difference in how people get to celebrate the lives of those they've lost to suicide. It's not the same, and it should be, because to me, it matters not how we lost somebody that we love, when they are no longer with us, we should be able to celebrate along with everybody else. I think we've talked about your book and we've talked about your lovely children, your very energetic children, and your husband, and said thank you. And we've covered your mom, Pam's story. And I have one last question for you. In your day-to-day, and I realize you have some really useful tools in NLP, and being a, you said, sales trainer and having all that leadership ability, I'd like you to offer a tip or a tweak that you use in your daily life to help you that perhaps our audience can put in their toolkit as well.
Yeah, I study neurolinguistics, and so a lot of the phrases that I will use help me using cognitive behavioral therapy and using words to shift the way that we approach things. So instead of saying, I have to, I need to, which puts sometimes guilt on us, I'll say things like, I get to. Instead of, I need to do something, I get to. Instead of, I need to go pick up my kids, I get to go pick up my kids. It turns an obligation into an opportunity.
Yes.
So that is definitely one that I will use. Same with the don't should on yourself. Don't get caught up in the shoulds. I should have done something. You get to do something. So yeah, I think that just those simple reframes of words that we use can help reframe our mindset on how we approach the day.
That is so good. And yeah, the don't should all over yourself is such a good point, because it's a habit we all do at some point. And I've done some NLP training as well, but there are times where you just fall back into those old patterns. Something just gets you riled enough that you lose all sense of what is your usual. And yeah, shouldn't all over myself is a bad one. It's one I got a lot.
In order to reinforce some of the words in my brain and into my everyday language, is I put a post-it note. I wrote the words get to and on a post-it note and put it next to my computer. So it's something that I stared at every single day. Yeah. Until it really became part of my natural vocabulary.
Oh, that's excellent. I'm going to one-up you there and suggest, because I've said this before to people who want to use affirmations and yet changing your language, your computer screens, the ones that have the cover, the glass, like your mirror in your bathroom, you can use a kid's wash-off marker. Mm-hmm. And put the word right there in front of you. So you don't lose the post-it note. You're always seeing it because it's always there in front of you. And we put them in the bathroom too. We like to be sure that we let the kids know they're worthy and they're enough.
I love that. Hey, I might do that. I'm going to do that tonight. I'm going to go take a dry erase marker.
I love it.
I'm going to go write on my kids' mirrors. I decorate their mirrors for every holidays. Yes. So I'll write something on there too.
I love that. I have a friend who created worthy wands. And on one side it says worthy, on the opposite side it says enough. And they are for men, women, and children. There's different types. But they've even taken them into prisons. Mm-hmm. And she was made a dame of the realm under St. George for saving lives with her worthy wands, which is just amazing. Mm-hmm. So on that uplifting note, I thank you ever so much, Danielle, for coming and joining us today. Danielle's book, Unstoppable Grit, all the information will be available along with the transcript and all the information on how you can get in contact with Danielle. Danielle has a lot to offer and a lot she can give you as well. You've got to check out her website when you're into the podcast. And I would suggest this one you might want to listen to a couple of times at least. So thank you for sharing your time with us and your wisdom and that wonderful tip. I absolutely love that. Turn obstacles into opportunities. What a great idea. I'm Elaine Lindsay. My guest today, Danielle Kobo, has been with us, and we're so appreciative. Make the very most of your today, every day, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Thank you for being here for another inspiring episode of Suicide Zen Forgiveness. We appreciate you tuning in. Please subscribe and download on your favorite service and check out SZF's YouTube channel or Facebook community. If you have the chance to leave a 5-star rating or review, it'd be greatly appreciated. Please refer this to a friend you know who may benefit from the hope and inspiration from our guests. Suicide Zen Forgiveness was brought to you by the following sponsors. Truul Social Media, the digital integration specialists. Let them get you rocking page one in the search results. Canada's keynote humorist Judy Kroon, motivational speaker, comedian, author, and stand-up coach at Second City. Judy has been involved for over a decade in the City Street Outreach Program in Toronto. Lisa Sugarman, Boston-based author, columnist, and crisis counselor with the Trevor Project, America's largest suicide and crisis support network for at-risk LGBTQ+ youth, storyteller with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, survivor of suicide loss, and mental health advocate. Lisa's purpose aligns with Elaine's as Lisa shares content and sparks conversations to help end the stigma of suicide and connect people with the support and hope they deserve. Do you have a story to share? Do you know someone you think would be a great guest? Please go to SZF42.com. And for our American listeners, that's SZF42.com. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again.